Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, a lot of diversity. We talk about what's happening at the border. We talk about the controller's race in California. And we head to the LA Times Festival of Books. But let's begin at the border, which continues to be one of the biggest stories in American politics. What's going on there? What's going to happen there when this thing called Title 42, this immigration rule, potentially goes away in the next few weeks? We have seen migration numbers way up already, and it could intensify even more. A lot of Democrats are cautioning the president about that as well. So our first guest is Bill Malusian, who is the Fox News Channel correspondent, used to be a Fox 11 correspondent, used to work with me. He's become a big national star. He's basically been at the border almost every day for the last year, done more coverage of this than any other national reporter. And he's got really interesting insights of what's it like on the ground. This week, while he was reporting on the ground, Kevin McCarthy came to the border, and he got the first interview with him after that whole New York Times tape came out. Talked to him about that, and we talked to him about his puppy love at the border as well, literal puppy love. So let's kick things off with one of my best friends, Bill Malusian. Bill Malusian, welcome to The Issue Is for the very first time.
Thanks for having me, man. Glad to be here.
All right. So many people talk about the border, right? But many of them have never visited there before. You're there almost every single day. What's it really like on the ground? What's really happening there?
It's just out of control. And, you know, some of the things we see down there are just crazy. Hundreds of people at a time crossing a river. You'll just be driving down a road and you'll see human smuggling incidents all along the road. You'll see Texas troopers arresting people. This video you're looking at right now, this was Mexican authorities literally trying to tackle people, migrants, before they got into the Rio Grande. And just to give you some perspective on, you know, how bad it is, back when President Obama was in office, his DHS Secretary Jay Johnson said 1,000 illegal crossings a day would be a crisis. We're at 7,000 a day right now. And when Title 42 drops, DHS is projecting upwards of 18,000 a day. So that's 18 times what Jay Johnson once said would be a crisis.
Well, and let's talk a little bit more about Title 42, because that is a phrase that a lot of people that follow this stuff know, but a lot of other people are like, what are you talking about? So in the most basic terms, this CDC rule, what is Title 42?
So Title 42 is a public health rule that allows the United States to immediately expel migrants back to Mexico. And that's that video you're looking at right now. I just shot that in Eagle Pass 2 weeks ago. That is Title 42 in action. So what happens is, once migrants come across the border, once they get picked up by Border Patrol, instead of going into a Border Patrol processing center and going through all that, they're essentially just put on a bus or a van, and they're driven right up to an international bridge or a port of entry, and they are expelled back into Mexico, immediate. And it's been used over 1.7 million times since the Trump administration. President Trump first started utilizing this, and President Biden administration, they've decided to keep it. It's basically the one Trump-era border policy that they've decided to keep. And it's very controversial because he takes a lot of heat from progressive liberals about it.
Sort of they're saying now, we're pulling all the other COVID rules, so we're going to pull this one too. The White House rolling out their plan for the end of Title 42 this week. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, who want to show you some videos, spending multiple days on Capitol Hill answering some tough questions on this. Democrats aren't all behind this idea. So here are the main aspects of what the Biden administration says is going to go in place. They say they want to surge resources to the border, speed up the ability to process migrants, and work with Central American countries so they can help stop some of this before it ever gets to us. The secretary was pretty confident on the Hill this week, but he had a very different tone in a private meeting with Border Patrol agents last year. You actually obtained audio of that. It's a little bit hard to hear, but try to listen in.
If our border is the first line of defense, we're going to lose, and this is unsustainable. We can't continue like this. Our people in the field can't continue, and our system isn't built for it.
So it's two completely different messages, one to the public and one in private. And weeks after Mayorkas made those comments that you just aired in that audio, 15,000 Haitians showed up under the bridge in Del Rio. Things have gotten significantly worse since he made those comments. Just last month in March, we saw over 220,000 illegal crossings. That's the most in DHS history. So what he said in that testimony really just does not match up with the reality on the ground.
Well, and speaking of public and private being different, let's talk for a moment about Kevin McCarthy, who is the House Minority Leader from Bakersfield. At first, he denied a New York Times report that said that he wanted to call then President Trump and ask him to resign after January 6th. So then the New York Times released the tape of him doing just that. Here's that tape.
It would be my recommendation you should resign. What he did is unacceptable. I've had it with this guy.
So Leader McCarthy visited the border this week and spoke with you about that. Here's some of that exchange.
Do you still stand by those comments?
Look, I never told the president to resign. It was a conversation that we had about scenarios going forward. But that's not really what critical happened 15 months ago. What's happening is what's happening on this border right now.
If you had said the New York Times reporting on it was, quote, false and wrong, then the tape came out. Did you lie?
No, because what was brought to me is said that I called the president to say that to resign. I never called the president to say resign.
So what'd you make of that? And what do you make of Kevin McCarthy's future?
He certainly tried to redirect the conversation a few times. He wanted to really only talk about the border when I asked him those questions, which, of course, all politicians do. They love to deflect. But, you know, it took several questions to try to get an answer out of him about it. And to his credit, you know, before we did that live interview, I told him, I said, I'd like to pull you aside for a quick live interview. And I'm not going to just ask you about the border. I want to ask you about this New York Times tape. And he said, OK, that's fine. And I said, anything's fair game. And he goes, anything's fair game. You got a job to do. But he's still very confident. He doesn't think this tape is going to have any impact on whether or not he would be elected as speaker if Republicans take the House in 2022. He doesn't think it's a big deal. And you know, you've seen President Trump has come out in support of him. So he's looking to move past this. You know, we were just glad to be able to get him on the record. I believe it was his first on-camera comment since that tape was leaked. So it was supposed to be a border trip, but, you know, there other news happened. So I wanted to ask him about it face to face.
So it appears that he is going to be the front runner to be the speaker if the Republicans take over the House. OK, we always do something fun on this show. You know that. I'm not going to ask you to dance because I've seen your dance moves in the club and nobody wants to see that. But I do want to ask you about dogs, which I know you love. And you're out at the border. You've had all these dogs come up to you and you and your mom have fallen in love with some of them. Talk to us about what we're looking at here.
So that is Rio and Roma. So basically, in January, during one of my border trips to McAllen, this one mother stray dog we talked to named Three Socks is what I named her. She trusts us a lot. We feed her every day. So one day she brought over all her puppies and we started feeding them. And over a span of several weeks, I started sending pictures to my mom and brother of these little puppies. And they fell in love with them. They're just stray border pups. They are not healthy. One has a little cut on its head, as you can see. And eventually they decided, you know, we can't just leave them out there. So they literally flew out from California. They flew into McAllen and they adopted both cute little girls. And both are now so big, I can't hold them up in one hand anymore.
That's great. And one note before we go, Bill is now this big national star. Some folks may not know. He used to work here with us. We are all so proud of all your hard work. You deserve the recognition. And we love you, brother.
Miss every single one of you. Great times.
All right.
Our thanks to Bill Malusian. Next up, a little bit different of a thing here on the podcast. We take you to the LA Times Festival of Books, which is the biggest book festival in all of North America. I'd never been, which is kind of crazy considering that I've lived here all my life. It's at USC this year, and we talk to a wide variety of characters, from Max Greenfield to Carl Bernstein to Adam Schiff to Danny Trejo, Ziggy Marley, Eric Dickerson. Talk to all of them and put together this nice story with all of them. So join us for the journey to my alma mater, USC, and the LA Times Festival of Books. Let's begin with Max.
It's how all books end, as if anything could be any more predictable.
Actor Max Greenfield is reading his book to a large crowd at the LA Times Festival of Books at USC.
Talk about reading and what that means to you and just the process of people getting to read what you said.
Well, if I'm being honest, I like the audiobooks. I like to listen to other people reading, and I retain that better.
Welcome and Good morning.
Many know Greenfield as Schmidt from Fox's New Girl.
Everybody calls me Speedy Johnson.
Or as Doug Johnson on CBS's The Neighborhood. His new role, author of the playfully titled children's book, I Don't Want to Read This Book.
Hopefully get some of those kids who are reluctant readers to jump on board.
His book, selling out here.
I'm just thrilled that the book is being received, and it's one of my favorite things to talk about.
There are 550 authors on hand from all different fields.
Have you written any children's
books? This is the first one.
Greenfield stationed next to the legendary political journalist, Carl Bernstein.
It's a wonderful, festive occasion.
In the 1970s, Bernstein and his partner Bob Woodward broke the Watergate story.
I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow.
That led to the resignation of then-President Richard Nixon and Dustin Hoffman playing Bernstein in the film All the President's Men.
Have you been threatened if you tell the truth?
Now, Bernstein has written about it all in his new memoir, Chasing History, A Kid in the Newsroom.
What's the most important lesson about journalism somebody like I can learn from your book?
Be a good listener. And I say this not to be critical, but I hope you talk to a lot of other people here, because it's not just putting a microphone in front of somebody. It really is about trying to find out what's going on here.
Following his advice, we speak to some of the 150,000 book lovers in attendance.
I love reading. I love books.
We're both book nerds, so this is like heaven to us right now. So
most people call themselves, you know, addressed as bookworms. I prefer the term book beast.
It's the biggest book fair in North America.
Boris Kachka is the book's editor for the LA Times. He says due to the pandemic, this is their first physical gathering since 2019. And virtual isn't the same.
People think of books as these solitary things that you read and you write by yourself, but that's not what literature is. That's not what books are. Books are about connecting with each other, and that includes in physical space.
I erase to find and to elevate.
Amanda Gorman, who famously read her poetry at the Biden inauguration, draws one of the biggest crowds here.
Oh, thank you.
So does Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff. His book, Midnight in Washington, earns the top prize here for current interest.
It was a total shock.
Schiff's book takes readers behind the scenes of then-President Donald Trump's first impeachment.
And you know that what he did was not right.
Over the last several years, my colleagues would stop me on the House floor and say, tell me you're writing this down, you better be writing this down. And I would always say, when do I possibly have time to write this down? And then the pandemic hit, and that gave me time to be at home and compose my thoughts.
Did it feel different than any other vote?
Schiff watched old TV interviews to jog his memory, since he hadn't kept a journal.
Including a number with you. that was the fun part, watching some of the other interviews, more torture.
Schiff says now he wants to write even more.
I've always enjoyed writing. Years ago, I wrote a number of screenplays. I'm a lawyer in LA. That's what we do. In fact, the former president, one of his attacks on me is he described me as a failed screenwriter. And I remember seeing that and thinking, he doesn't realize that in my LA district, half my constituents are failed screenwriters. That's a compliment. But I would like to write again, although I think what I'll write is a work of fiction. I think I'll write a spy novel next.
Eric Dickerson never expected he'd be an author.
At running back, number 29, Eric Dickerson.
Dickerson is an L.A. Rams legend and NFL Hall of Famer.
Of all the things you've done in your life, and you've done a lot and accomplished a lot, where does author sort of rank into everything?
Author's pretty high, I gotta say.
Watch My Smoke takes on tough issues like racism, head injuries, and the ugly aspects of the football business.
The truth sometimes is not pretty.
As a player, Dickerson left it all out on the field and says he did the same as an author.
This will be the last book I'll do, I'll tell you that. I won't be doing another
one. Why is that?
I'm good. I'm glad I got a chance to do this book because, and I said it on stage that, you know, I don't know if I'll be able to remember all this stuff later in my life because of the head injuries that I've incurred. But I'm glad I did it. I'm glad I remember it now.
I'm sorry. I didn't make enough for everybody.
Actor Danny Trejo is on the cooking stage making recipes from his cookbook, Trejo's Tacos.
What's the secret for the Danny Trejo's cooking strategy?
Patience. Just keep doing it. It's like you can get great at anything as long as you practice.
In Trejo, My Life of Crime, Redemption, and Hollywood, Trejo writes about his early life as a drug addict and robber, finding God in prison, and dedicating his life to service.
Everything good that's happened to me has happened as a direct result of helping someone else. That's how I got into the restaurant business.
His book signing, drawing the longest line here.
It's just such a blessing. I mean, it's like every morning, it's like just, hey, dear Heavenly Father, let me sign every autograph, let me take every picture. But it's such a blessing just to be able to make somebody's day with a how are you, a picture of, the only thing I use when I'm running through an airport. I have missed planes.
Also here, Ziggy and Orly Marley. Ziggy says he used to steal books from his famous father, Bob, as a kid.
Electronics don't replace books. Like books, there's nothing like a book. Nothing like a book. There's no phone, no iPad. There's nothing like a book. Pass it down through generations.
Ziggy and Orly's new children's book is called Little John Crow.
The message is to accept everyone for who they are and love them as they come and be proud of who you are and what you bring to the world all the time.
Ziggy says writing for kids is especially fulfilling.
I feel like the children are the ones who is going to make the changes in this world that's going to make the world a better place. I feel like we have to speak to children. That's where the hope is for humanity.
It is exciting to see so many young readers here falling in love with books. Perhaps Cooper Oberbeck says it best.
Sometimes when books don't have pictures, you can create the picture in your head.
We love her. Our thanks to photographer Rudy Leyva and editor Luke Nixon for really going above and beyond on that story.
Finally this week, the race for California controller. Not usually the sexiest race that you talk about in all of politics, but this year it is a very interesting race. Not a lot of attention on the governor's race, not a lot of competition for him, but there is competition in the race for California controller. You've got Malia Cohen from NorCal, endorsed by the Democratic Party. You got Ron Galperin, the actual controller in Los Angeles, running for California controller. You got Steve Glazer, a state senator. And you've got Lanhee Chen, the only Republican running. And Lanhee Chen was just endorsed by the LA Times. They said it's time for an independent watchdog. He was kind of surprised by that. It's given his campaign some momentum. And he joined us this week on The Issue Is. Here's Lanhee. Lanhee Chen, welcome back to The Issue Is.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
All right. You say you almost fell out of bed when you got that LA Times endorsement. Take us to that moment.
Well, I was actually in LA and my phone was buzzing kind of a disproportionate amount early in the morning. I think it was probably about 5:30 or 6 o'clock. And I looked over and I said, well, that looks like me. I think they're talking about me. And then as I began to read the article, I literally kind of stumbled out of bed. I was surprised to read it because, as you noted, the LA Times is not known for endorsing Republicans. In fact, I don't think they've endorsed one in almost a decade for statewide office. But I was pleased to get their endorsement and obviously agree with the rationale, which is the controller needs to be an independent fiscal watchdog for our state.
Well, and let's talk a little bit about the controller, because it doesn't get a ton of press in terms of what the controller actually does. So if you can, explain in the most simple terms, what does the job actually do?
The controller is the chief financial officer of the state. It's supposed to be the person who gives taxpayers accountability over every single dollar the state spends. Think of the position as a fiscal watchdog job. And so really the responsibility of the controller is to ask tough questions and make sure we get answers about where all of this money is going. And so that's why the notion of having somebody who's independent from the party in power is so important. You know, I say the ideal controller needs to be a fiscal watchdog, not a lapdog for the other Sacramento insiders. And that's why this role traditionally should have been filled by somebody who's got some independence from everybody else.
What is the number one biggest difference if you're actually in that job instead of one of the other Democrats?
But we're going to be very tough with the audit power. The controller can audit any program of state government at any time. Also, any local program, like, for example, our K-12 schools, I'm going to use that audit power aggressively without concern for anyone else in state government and really just get to the bottom of where all this money is going so taxpayers understand where their money is being spent.
Now, you haven't said whether you voted for Trump. But what do you say to a voter who says, I like a lot of what you're saying, but Trump was so bad, January 6th was so awful, I can't bring myself to support someone who won't denounce him?
Well, look, I agree. January 6th was awful. It was an insurrection. And in many ways, those who are involved ought to be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. Moreover, I think those who are saying that the election was unfairly decided or was not decided properly, I disagree with those people. I think, listen, Joe Biden was elected president, whether you agree with him or disagree with him. And the reality is my record, you mentioned it earlier, I've served in both Republican and Democratic administrations. You want in this office someone with demonstrated independence and a bipartisan background, and that's what I've got.
Well, part of this process is getting to know you a little bit. Can you kind of give us the quick version of your backstory, somebody who grew up here in Southern California?
Yeah, you know, my parents are immigrants from Taiwan. They came over to the U.S. in the 1970s. I grew up in Roland Heights, which some of your viewers may be from there, and it's about 25 miles east of L.A. Went to local public high school, then had the good fortune to be able to get into Harvard University and went back there, got 4 degrees, including my Ph.D. in political science, served in administrations in Washington, D.C. My wife and I have 2 kids, 8 and 11. We moved back to the Bay Area. I've been at Stanford University for the last 9 years. I've also built my own small business, helped to run a large healthcare system up here. So I've got an experience set at the intersection of policymaking and business and academics and understand the challenges we face as a state. One more thing I'll mention, which I think some viewers will like, some may not, is I'm a lifelong Dodger and Laker fan and continue to be huge fans of both teams. Disappointed in the Lakers this year, but hopeful for the Dodgers looking ahead.
Yeah, the Dodgers, a lot better future than the Lakers right now. All right, we want to get a little more of your favorites. We play a game called Personal Issues. 30 seconds on the clock. Ready to go?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
Who is your favorite band or musician?
Boys to Men.
Ooh, favorite book?
Oldie but goodie. Favorite book, Three Ring Circus, about the Lakers, actually.
Jeff Pearlman.
A book about the Lakers, the Lakers of the, you know, with Shaq and Kobe
favorite,
in that era.
Favorite TV show?
Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Oh, my God. That's one of my favorites. Favorite favorite Democrat?
Favorite Democrat, probably Dianne Feinstein. You know, I know there's been some reporting about her recently, but she served our state well for many years.
Very interesting. Lonnie Chen, some good choices there. I agree with. Best of luck on the campaign trail.
Our thanks to Lonnie Chen and Bill Malusian, all the folks at the LA Times Festival of Books. Thanks to you for listening. Next week, we'll be joined by the director of the CDC, Rochelle Walensky. We'll talk to her about COVID, where we're at, talk to her about Title 42, talk to her about the lessons learned, and she'll be out at a vaccination site here in California. Thanks again for listening. Send me a message in social media or an email, and I'd love to hear your thoughts about the show and let other people know about it as well. Give us a good review, rating, all the rest of it. See you next week for more of The Issue Is.